Jake Mamo. Jake Mamo. Jake Mamo. Jake Mamo. Jake Mamo. Jake Mamo. And that'll be Jake Mamo on tonight's What Would Brian Bevan Say?
Coming up on the podcast, we have a general chat, because there's fuck all else to do. Ben Curry's back with just a packet mixed spice. Has Dennis sold any rugby league cookbooks? We drop Sam Sankey's stats, because they're shit. There's a vote off on your preferred broadcaster. Not forgetting we take a peek at a player's Instagram. Plus your lockdown letters. And Daniel decides to alienate at least 50% of the listeners. This is What Would Brian Bevan Say? Hello, I'm Rob London, and with Captain Tom turning 100, I worked out only 48% of his age. It was an easy maths calculation to do. But where are my two other podcasters that make up 67.12% of our podcasting combined age? Firstly, a man who is just a stone's throw away from turning half a century, although some would say with him suffering from scrupulosity disorder, he's entered the nervous 90s already. It's Sam Platinum Sankey!
Hello, good morning. Yes, scrupulosity. I had to look that up and I saw thorough, accurate, things like that, that I thought, oh, that's nicer than some of the things you call me.
Like
and then
twat.
I saw that, yeah, and then I saw that it was also a fear of having things done wrong or doing things wrong, which is every week I'm fearful about what you're going to say.
Well,
example proven.
I tell you what, the gloves are off tonight, aren't they? Because we've not got a guest. It's nice just to have the three of us back, isn't it? You've been on your best behaviour. Hang on, Dennis, I'll introduce you first. Stick your hand up. I should also say we're now using Zoom, and Dennis has found that you can click on a little button and put a thumbs up in the corner. I've not found where the two fingers back to him is yet. But also, an old lad that shares an age with an atomic number idiom, a song by Bob Dylan, the degree of latitude between Canada and USA, and in Judaism, the number of days of the counting of Omar. Yes, it's Dennis, the international dialing code for Germany. Waywell.
Good morning. I'm full of beans today. Actually, I don't feel like the international dialing code of Germany. I feel more like the international dialing code of Italy, being that I've got olive skin and lovely long hair, and I always like to be in the sun, which is 39 for Italy. I would have put you being at 41, Switzerland, Rob, being that you're always very neutral, sitting on the fence with your opinion. And I've got Sam as Peru, because is he a bit older than us? He's 51.
Isn't he? I had the Peru Sabutio out players. You know, the Sabutio team. And didn't Peru, I know it was Colombia that had the goalkeeper that used to come running from the halfway line, wasn't it? All the way out.
Yeah.
But funny thing, I think Peru were in Brazil's group in 1978. I think
Peru were in Scotland's group, weren't they?
With Holland.
Peru beat Scotland.
Who were Holland, not the Netherlands at the time.
Yes.
Anyway, we have got guests on today. We've got guests on today.
Oh, have we got?
Phone in a bit later on, you don't forget.
Forgot about that. Yeah, we have got a phone in. Well, what have we got, really? I mean, we've got no rugby league. We've got no guests. And anything? Anyone been up to anything exciting in the last?
I've caught my grass a few times.
Oh, well, at least you've not got artificial grass, which is nice to know. One thing I did hear this week was the Dave Woods interview with Jonathan Davis, who was going to come on our podcast until Dave Woods pinched him. I mean, classic Dave Woods. He was lovely on our podcast, but off air, what a so.
That's why people say no to you, isn't it? And that's exactly why I'm fearful of what you say every week.
Yeah. Any good points on that podcast worth talking about?
Yes, there were.
Let's give him another plug.
Well, I tell you what, one thing that Jonathan Davis did say, dating back to the 93-94 season, Sam, when Davis was 31, I think that was the year he scored that blinding try where he kicked over the top and sort of went round the fullback and scored. I remember being there that day.
It was Halifax. Yeah.
We finished joint top with Bradford and Wigan. We think we played first. We played Sheffield and we won, and then Bradford won and Wigan won, and Wigan took out the title. Davis said on Woodsy's podcast that he thought we were one player short of winning the title that year. He thought we needed a ball-playing second row forward. And had we had a ball-playing second row forward, we'd have probably won. I've got the team sheet here. We had 27 players that played for Warrington that year. Some big names. When you go through this list, I mean, I'm assuming there was no salary cap, or I don't know how we did it, but running from the top, we had Alan Bateman, Andy Bennett. Remember Andy Bennett, the young lad, the small lad on the wing?
Yeah, full of energy.
Yeah, Gary Chambers, who had an absolutely blinding season at prop. Paul Cullen, Paul Derbyshire, Jonathan Davis, Dave Elliott, Kevin Ellis, Mark Forster, Mike Gregory. I think Mike was coming right to the end there. I think Mike had a few knee injuries at that stage. Didn't play that much. A young Yistin Harris at only 17 years of age. Mark Hilton was only 19. Colin Hodgkinson, Bob Jackson, Greg Mackey, Robert Myler, who'd been terrific in the A team the year before. Couldn't find his way to fullback, though, because we had Lee Penny. Roland Phillips probably had his best year. He was 28. John Roper was only 18. He was another one that was coming through. Chris Rudd, an established centre. Gary Sanderson used to just tackle everything that moved. Kelly Shelford, Gary Tees, Craig Teitzel, Tony Thornley, who I think did play a bit of second row that year. I think we transformed him into a second row player. John Thursfield and Paul Williamson. Presuming that Gregory didn't play that much, I'm presuming that Shelford went to 13 a little bit, with Harris sneaking in and we had Mackie in there as well.
Harris played on the wing a few times in his very early days.
Looking at this team, I think that year that the two wingers were Forster and Rob Myler. I think they were the wingers. Mm. But it does stand out like a sore thumb. As Jonathan Davis says, we are missing a second row forward.
Well, yeah, possibly. I mean, you had Bob Jackson, and don't forget, in them days, he wasn't the same interchange going in on and off the field. So Bob Jackson...
But he was playing prop,
whilst he played prop as well, but I suppose he would be using him. Yeah, Mike Gregory, it was his last year. Ifs and buts and maybes, but if Gregory had been two years younger, might that have made a big difference?
Yeah.
Or 2 years later... Paul Sculthorpe came in 1996. So if he'd have been 2 years older, you know, and he was still a young lad, but I remember seeing him carry our pack even as a 17, 18-year-old. So yeah, if we're talking fine margins, that could have been a difference, couldn't it?
I don't know if it would have been fine margins. When I had a look at the goal difference, we were plus 198 in that year, and everyone around us, 1-4, was 300 points on average. So would a ball handler really have made much of a difference? What about a try scorer?
Well, ball handler would have led to more tries, wouldn't it? I think we are missing also a hooker in that side. You look through that side, where we got John Thursfield, God love him, you know, he always tried, but from that really, who was it? Colin Hodgkinson, was he the other hooker in that lot?
Thursfield played and played and played. Oh, he used to have his wrists taped up, didn't he, with bright white.
If you look at that, you know, Thursfield he's not scored a try all year. You imagine Daryl Clark in that team, how many Daryl Clark would have scored. Incredible.
But I mean, even if you go away with you, my two overriding memories really of that year in terms of matches, there was the Wigan game where the controversial penalty that Cullen gave away, and then Malvinoff and I think it was Fano Botica kicked for them. But the other one I remember going away to Wakefield just before Christmas, and we lost a midweek game or a nighttime match.
Lost
on a muddy pitch. And if we'd have won that game, it wouldn't have come down to points difference.
You could have probably picked up something nice in Wakefield at Christmas. Chlamydia.
Well, I mean, just bringing it back on topic a minute after that. I mean, if we were to look round at a particular player, a ball handling player, I had a look at the, the league. And Halifax were pretty good around that time. I think they finished third.
Yeah.
And so I went down a little rabbit hole. Richard Marshall was playing for him. He didn't do too much good. There was another guy, Mark Perrett, Paul Moriarty were there. Oh. Michael Jackson, not the real one.
Yeah.
Which we talked about.
He was from Sheffield, wasn't he? I think.
No, he's from Wakefield. He'd beat it from Sheffield.
But the pick of the probably ball handlers was Martin Martin Marner?
Where are you going with this? Why have you been studying Halifax? This is the What Would Brian Bevan Say podcast, Dennis.
I know, but they wear like blue and white. I don't know. I just had something to do. It's bloody lockdown. I've got nothing else to do.
You have got VE Day this week, though, haven't you? I think, isn't that coming up?
My parents
are putting a load of bunting up. I presume when this is all over, we'll have a VD day, going back to victory over the disease.
Well, VE day, virus eradication day, surely.
Oh, very good.
Heard it here first. One other fact I picked up, just out of interest. David Plange in the season of 95 to 96 was top try scorer with Martin O'Fire at 28.
Castleford, was he?
No.
Who was
OKR.
He was he?
Yeah. You say about Castleford and another second rower. Obviously, we got Nick Owen 5 years or so after that season. If we could have got him... If we could have got him when he first went to Castleford, maybe he'd have been just about in that zone for the...
Always had a good haircut, I thought.
He did, didn't he?
Interesting haircut.
Yeah. Lost a leg. Went back to New Zealand and lost a leg.
It ended up quite tragic, that, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. Motorbike accident. Right, well, that's that covered. The other thing I was thinking about is, what's our best back seven? What is our best seven now? Working on the assumption that we've seen Matty Ashton on Instagram this week and he's back on his bike, metaphorically and literally.
Have him in the clips?
We've got everyone, got him in the quills. Everyone is ready to go. So I'll put mine out there first. My seven are Ashton at fullback, wingers Charnley and Lynham. My centres, I'm going for blatant pace. I'm putting Ratchford and Mamo in my centres.
Ooh.
Austin at six, even more pace. So we've got six pacey players in a side there. Let the forwards do their job. Let the backs do theirs. And then I've got Widdop in at seven. What do you reckon to that, lads?
I've just got one disagreement with you there, and I would swap out Mamo, although I accept you want him pace. I'd swap out Mamo for King and I'd go for strength over pace. But I'd have Ratchford right centre, Toby King left centre.
And Dennis, have you got the back seven for Halifax?
What's his name? Paul Rowley.
Hey, good memory. It wasn't one of the back seven, though, was it?
Yeah. There we go. The only thing I would do is rotate the halves. I would probably have Ratchford, Widdop and Austin in the halves, and I'd play the better two combination on form rather than just sort of, you know.
So who are you going to leave? You're going to leave one of them out, basically.
Yeah.
You're going to put... Oh, Blake Austin played centre for Canberra quite a bit, didn't he, when he couldn't get in the team?
He's going on the bench.
Put him on the bench.
Oh, right, okay.
Right, yeah. Fair enough. All right. Well, I think we're all in agreement there that my seven's the best. Okay, I also noticed on Twitter that there was a few Toronto fans looking for a bit of this 16 million. I mean, you know, I don't want to sound xenophobic, but fuck off. That money is for the... the teams in this country. I mean, they've got a multi-millionaire in charge. Can we have a little bit of that money, please?
Jesus. It's not fair, is it?
Yeah. I think, and I'm looking into this, I think we should ditch Toronto. I don't see the point of them. They're a parasite who are going to leave us and go running off to the NRL the minute they get the chance to. This is just foreplay for them, but they're going to stick it into the NRL when they get the chance. I'd go Cumbria. Population, 500,000. Warrington have a population of 202,000. They get 5.5% attending on an average of about 11,000. On that same calculation, you could get 25,000 people watching in Cumbria every week. I know Sam's not happy with this because he's got his tickets for Toronto and he wants to go over there. But I just think Cumbria is the missing piece in the jigsaw.
No, I think that boat sailed, so to speak. I think people say Cumbria is a hotbed of rugby league, and I do agree with that. But you're talking 500,000 people spread over a vast area. There's no huge conurbation.
Hang on, Sam. I live in Australia. I go for a shit further than from Carlisle to Whitehaven.
Yeah, but you've got, what, 10, 12 million living in Sydney and the surrounding area?
Yeah.
What you've got, Barrow, 50,000 population, maybe. Whitehaven, 20-ish. Workington, 20-ish thousand.
Where's this half a million coming from?
My point being, where are you going to sit the ground? Are you going to put it in Barrow? Because if you put it in Barrow, Whitehaven and Workington
won't come. This is the genius behind it, Sam. I'm putting the ground in Toronto. No, it's going in Toronto. That's where the ground's going, in Toronto, just to piss Toronto off. That's what I'm doing here.
No, I think what we should do is you should pick a place like Penrith where it's just off the M6 and it's centralised.
Yeah.
Or you pick Kendal and then you can basically have all the holidaymakers and everybody make a holiday out of it. So like wherever you are, you just sort of say, oh, right, I'll go and catch the match there. They're playing at home. So Kendal Kites or Kendal Otters. Something like
Kendal
that.
Otters,
Or Terry Nupkins, quite a dangerous animal, aren't they? Can bit his fingers off, didn't they?
They do. if you're talking expansion properly, though, I think the biggest likelihood of success in the current structure will be Toulouse, because Toulouse have come up through the ranks. So to speak, Toronto came through the divisions, I realise, but Toulouse and Catalan would give you a focal point and
give you a holiday,
a local derby and a holiday, and you're not, and it's on the same time zone. I think that's more likely to work.
Have we not now learned that this sort of expansion beyond the shores of Britain is becoming limited with the modern day? I mean, you've got volcanoes, you've got, terrorism, we've got this virus making potential issues. I mean, I'm sure it was all covered in the due diligence of Robert Elston and Ralph Rimmer that, should eventualities like this in their business continuity plan will highlight what the league will exactly do in that situation. It doesn't work, does it?
No, it doesn't. I'm still holding on to the fact that I've got Bob Trebor playing for Cumbria up in Kendal, and he's very good at dummying, and he's going to be called the Kendal Mint Fake. Yeah, that's Kendal Mint Fake. Yeah, that's I'll write that down. Sorry, what were you saying, Dennis? What were you going on about? You sound like Phil Kaplan then for a second.
Yeah, well, I'd still be talking for a few hours yet. No, but I don't think that this format actually works with the other teams outside the country. I think I agree. I think we should concentrate on Cumbria and put up a team there.
Yeah, well, Bobby Goulding came out with some genius this week. And I don't know whether my sarcasm came over with that comment.
Have you come over?
Yeah, ripping them all up and putting a team in Newcastle, a team in Manchester, a team in Liverpool, a team in God knows where, and just starting again from zero. Well done, Bobby. Let's do that.
All right, Sam, talk to us about this 16 million, and I've got in brackets here, loan question mark. Come on, what are the interest rates?
Interest rate at base plus 3%. But we fixed it on a 5-year forward fix with no break clause. Repayments to be staggered. We've got a 6-month repayment holiday. What else can I remember?
This is nothing to do with the 16 million then?
To do with the 16 million.
I thought that was inside information.
For all of our mickey taking of Ralph Rimmer.
Who's done that?
Let's be fair. The guy, and it would appear to be driven by the RFL.
Is this a caveat?
No, it would appear to be driven by the RFL.
He's had his Churchillian moment, hasn't he? His Churchillian moment, as Rimmer.
Let's give credit where credit's due. It's not an awful lot of money, but for those clubs who are in Championship and League One, and it's a lot of money for them, isn't it? It's an awful lot of money for them.
Was that the black dog barking in the background there? Churchill's black dog.
How does it work though, Sam? How does this work where you've got basically the Super League, which potentially they might not have any money to give or to get from Sky, because who knows what's going to happen. And then you've got the RFL with £16 million in the back pocket. How does it work going forward? Does this not now, you know, is the start of the end of the two different administrators and we go to one in the future?
Well, yes, that's always while I've been watching rugby, that's been the back and two on it. Originally, it was the Rugby League versus Bala, the amateur game, and then Super League wanted to break away and do their own thing. I feel that we struggle a bit to link Super League to the Championship. Personally, it would be two divisions for me and one TV deal for them, but with still the Rugby League having the overarching say on rules around the world, really.
So it's fucked.
Yeah. That 3 minutes basically meant, Dennis, it's fucked.
Well, yeah. Let's have a look at the runners and riders of who would be the best person placed to take us forward as a unified. As just one person leading it.
Words and things.
Bobby Goulders.
I'm just using Ralph Rimmer's words there. But you've got Ralph Rimmer, who has obviously proved himself, and we've heard it from a few of our...
But the thing is, it's a bit like Churchill. Churchill wasn't very good after the war, was he? They soon got rid of him.
That's a good point.
It's this Rimmer's moment.
What about then Robert Elston, the current incumbent of Super
Where is Robert Elston? Where's he gone to?
I don't know.
I'm not sure. When he first came in, you thought, oh, this is going to be a huge... This could be a huge improvement, but I've not noticed.
There we go.
I'm going to give him anything that he's done.
He's done £400,000 a year. Let's be honest. So he's out. Who is vying for position?
Well, Carl. You know it is, don't
it's
you?
It's Carl, isn't it? It's Carl.
It's going to be Fitzpatrick.
So you think Fitzpatrick?
He's just got to be careful when he makes his move. I think that's what he's got to do, and it's not quite the time to do it yet, is it? But it's going to happen.
Who's been banging on the door for the past 10 years? No other than Gary Hetherington. He was the only one who voted against Super League in the first place out of everybody. And he's always banging on, and he seems to be on the back of the RFL. I think he's manoeuvring himself up there somewhere.
Making a power grab.
What are they going to do with this money, Sam? What's everyone going to do with it? They're going to go down the pub and piss it up the wall. I mean, what's it going to do, this money, this 16 million?
Yeah, are they going to spend it like... lager, won't it?
Well, are they going to spend it like they used to spend Super League money and come out with nothing on the other side?
Well, that's a fair, isn't it? Is it subsistence money? If it's just subsistence money and it's going to be used simply to keep the clubs going, which I presume it will be used, or do they end up sinking it all into For the listeners, Rob is now looking up in the Oxford English Dictionary the word subsistence.
Over to Dictionary Corner.
I'm not got my glasses. I can't see what it said.
For God's sake.
Hey, great haircuts. Have you seen the best? Who's going to come out of isolation with the best haircut or the worst? I see Daryl Clark's not cutting his hair. He's got a bit of a mop going. Did anyone see Sitaliti Akawala's haircut? This morning.
I've seen that yet.
Go on. I'll find it for you, lads. You keep talking amongst yourselves and I'll
find it. Joe Philbin had one on his timeline the other day. It's disappeared now, but it's getting actually quite large, like the Hair Bear Bunch. So obviously he needs a haircut. So he's obviously growing it. He looks like Matt King, actually.
I think there's going to be two distinct camps, isn't there, when we get back on the pitch. There's going to be the shaved look and there's going to be a long-haired look. I can't see anyone other than Ben Murdoch-Masella being in charge of the longer locks. Now, will Mamo go back to his long hair that he wore when he was at Huddersfield? But shaved will surely, Lynham will surely be a shaved head. Curry, Charlie, King, Hughes and Hill. Blimey.
That's a great haircut from Macaulay.
That is a thing, isn't it?
Looks like that TV aerial in Wakefield on top, doesn't it?
I remember when
anyone who's not seen it to actually look that photo up. That is excellent.
Yeah. I remember Rick Thackeray playing on the wing for Warrington.
Oh yes,
and
yes.
They used to pull his hair because it was long. I remember someone really had a. They must have like ripped his scalp off once, just down the side near Legends. And he got up and he was almost crying. He was in that much pain. I have a funny feeling no one's going to pull Siti Litiakawala's little bottle on top.
No. Was Thackeray's hair permed or was it naturally curly, do you think?
It was a bit of both, wasn't it, really? A bit of both. Right, we're all done then on News of the Week. Anyone got anything else they want to add? I mean, I can't really think of anything else. I was watching old runnings of TV shows in lockdown this week, and I watched The Krypton Factor. Remember with Gordon Burns?
Yeah.
I thought, who would we put on our Krypton Factor team? Because it's not just physicality, it's also mental strength as well.
Yeah.
I'm going Jake Mamo.
Oh, interesting.
Can we do it by the disciplines of the Krypton Factor, the rounds? Do you remember what they were?
There was an assault course.
That was always right, round so that, two. That was always so, round two.
I'll tell you what, I'll go through them.
Go on then.
So, first round, mental agility. Who would be best for mental agility? I've got Ratchford. I think he's quite an all-round sort of good.
He speaks well.
Yeah, he's been very consistent over the years. Really good.
Yeah. Okay. All right. We'll give you Ratchford. Yeah. Round two.
Response. Now.
Response. Just giving you a response. What?
This is the response.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. The response round. I think this is where it was response in terms of physicality rather than mental. But I'm not entirely sure. I didn't look that far. But I put Matty Ashton there because I thought of speed.
Yeah. Fast twitch fibres here and all that type of thing.
Observation.
Gusting.
Observation. Yeah. I've got Luther because we'll come into it in the Instagram. Yeah. He does look nice.
Do you think you not put a halfback in there who's weighing up the whole field? Not put Widdop in there maybe for observation?
Okay. All right. I'll change that. Physical ability.
The assault course, it's got to be Darrell Clark. Yeah. It's got to be our action man. He would eat up that assault course.
Intelligence, tough one.
Ooh.
Well, I go.
Well, Chris Hill was on Mastermind a few weeks ago.
Yeah. You keep wanting to get Mamo in, don't you, Rob? Is there any reason for that?
I just feel he's a little bit isolated from the rest of the team. If he's a little bit more cultured than the rest of them, from what I can see.
Being isolated is not too bad at the moment, is it? No, general knowledge.
Oh, that's a tricky one. Probably Lionel. Well,
yes, that's what I got.
Yeah.
Reason being is he gets very into his facts, whether they're right or not. At least he's putting the effort in.
Referring to anything in particular there, Dennis?
Hey,
you referring to anything in particular there? Lionel's facts.
Only the fact that he put a thing out on the internet the other week. His words were about Boris Johnson being a bit. Faking the virus.
Yeah. And what's his face doing a good job? The orange man over in the US.
Yeah.
I think I've got a little bit of Alzheimer's kicking in because I couldn't remember what Donald Trump's name was then. And my neighbours who've lived next door for 5 years, who I speak to on a daily basis, I said to my partner the other day, I said, what are their names again?
Jesus
Christ. Oh, dear. The beginning of the end.
Anyway, they're moving, so it doesn't matter, does it? That's fine. No. Okay, with Ben Curry tied down from playing rugby, it seemed only correct in the podcast a few weeks ago to Chris and Curry's Curry of the Week, a tie-down green curry. Sam, is there any sign of putting a bit of spice back in Ben's pepper?
Well, you know, last week I thought Ben was coming nicely back to a good warmth with his improved statistics on his 10k runs, but I was
running
through.
He's not cycling, he's running.
Cycling and running is Ben. Mm. He's I told you, he's doing a bit of everything. And I thought he was going to get, you know, he was improving, but I was flicking through some old Twitter feeds the other day, and a couple of weeks ago, similar to a lot of the players and sportsmen, he'd done his own team out of household objects. So, for example, he put a bin there and said that was a fill bin. He also had two pieces of ham in a line, so that was line ham. And for his second row, he had a jar of Patak's Tikka Masala for Ben Murdoch Masala. And he had a packet of Mayflower's medium curry sauce mix. Oh. Medium curry sauce mix. And said that was himself. Now, how disappointing was I? I expected to see him growing his own chilies, his own curry plants, maybe making his own spice mix, but instead he compared himself to a medium curry sauce mix. So very disappointing. He's gone very mild for me, I'm afraid. What do you think, Dennis?
Well, I think at the end of the day, in the lockdown, everything's drying up and, you know, they can't get out anywhere or anything. And I would almost say that it's getting to a packet curry now at the moment. He must be getting very frustrated and dried up. And I had a look at, well, you know, there's a well-known one, Vesta. According to nostalgia.com, nostalgiacentral.com, Vesta was first released in the 70s and was considered to be a sophisticated meal and eaten by someone with a worldly palate. So, quite a good write-up. Yeah. Described as a DIY curry available in a choice of flavours, of which none were particularly curry-like, sachet curry powder that you put hot water on. And I think basically that's what we need at the moment, innit? We need to put a bit of hot water on and bring these guys back to life.
Have you heard the appetizing news from Vesta? From now on, with every single Vesta variety, you'll be getting
Zen curry.
But you don't pay extra for it.
It did also go on to say that the end result was a shiny brown skew that looked and tasted like shit. But that's not a reflection on
it. Just cutting out the middleman, that, isn't it? Just pouring it straight down the toilet.
Yeah. I mean, the thing about it is, I've brought that up. I mean, I used to live off them for about 2 years when I was a student.
Yeah, you did, didn't you?
Yeah.
What was that curry house, Dennis, on the way to your house on the right as you went out of Warrington? It was a renowned curry house.
I've told you this before. I have no idea because I used to order steak and chips.
They did steak and chips every time. Now, have you ordered your Price Wise with Vincent Price and Steve Price Vegan Rugby League Cookbook? No, I didn't think you had. Although bearing in mind the quality of Channel 4's Sunday brunch at the moment, perhaps it's a good alternative. So without a tackle in sight, but undoubtedly a big bag of shite, it's time for Dennis's Tackle Bags.
Tackle Bags.
You're joking. Not another one? Oh, for God's sake, I can't stand this.
Last week, it was the Price Wise Cookery Book. As just
said
mentioned
that.
By the London.
Fucking said
I've
that.
I've written this. I know you were going to say it.
I'm on edge.
Anyway, it's full of vegan recipes for all players to enjoy and use during the lockdown. So my idea of releasing this book, an eclectic, I got that word in, array of stunning food presented by Mr. Price, refreshing the Vincent Price book for the 2020 edition, full of vegan recipes. Well, as you can imagine, my bag's been full this week in this lockdown. Do you want to ask a question, Sam? Are you putting your hand up there? No. Oh, it was two fingers. Oh, thank you. Yes, 81%. Thank you. Jamie Six Toes, although I'm not a fan of vegan food, I'll buy this just to see what other recipes Steve Price has up his sleeve. Here's hoping he's not a one-trick pony and has more than a hot curry with a kick, or as I like to call it, a feet tick. Oh, fuck. Sorry.
Come on, hold it together.
A fifth tikka tackle king prawn masala.
There you go.
Oh, I've got a buzzing in my ear. No, 18%. Caravan Sex Tales said, I don't eat anything out of a cookery book unless it comes out of a Fanny Craddock.
Yeah. She was racist, Fanny Craddock, allegedly.
Really?
Mm.
Good.
Yeah.
Other 1%, Les Void. Do you want me to sort out the supplement section? I actually found out, I was going to write back to him, but I found out he's serving 3 years for drug supply, extending, basically, he was something to do with temper.
Oh, he lost his temper.
Anyway,
on to this week.
You're pushing me along. Why are you pushing me along?
Because we're on Zoom. We only get 40 minutes. It's costing a fortune, this now.
Right, this week, isolation rugby is the topic. Now, with the uncertain future of clubs, and let's be honest, I am really concerned. We've got coiled springs sat at home, these players, athletes. We need to bring them back.
We're all
we
on
need
edge.
To get them, yeah, they're all on edge. They want to get back. I'll be honest, I don't think we're going to get back this year. I don't know how it's going to work. I really don't. But this is where we need to use these athletes and come up with another form of the rugby game. That, you know, and rugby flies in the face of social distancing because obviously we're a contact sport. So I have a format of the game that should be considered. So get everyone in's interest. We all want to watch it. They all want to play it. So welcome to the ISO Touch footy game. Now, here the teams are kitted out with a Laser Quest body armour. The armour consists of an LED front and back light. It's got a proximity sensor in that detects movement within a 2 metre radius. So what we're doing is we're playing touch rugby, but obviously with the kit on to advance the social distancing element and make sure that we can still play the game. So we could incorporate this little chip in the ball.
Sorry? So I'm just looking at people on Instagram just there. Putting clothes on their dogs.
Oh, for fuck's sake. Anyway, put a chip in the ball. Obviously, then you can tell the opposition and you know the who's got the ball against the defending side, and then it lights up. So I thought, well, this is a good idea. We've got £16 million in the bank. What are we going to do with it? Let's create another game and get the ball rolling, should I say, with a 2 metre social distancing thing. Have you got any comments?
No, I think that's very good, Dennis. I mean, the most important thing at this day and age is just to encourage you in this current lockdown. So well done, Dennis. That was really good. Really enjoyed that section.
Well, if you'd like to write in then on the back of that sarcastic sort of comment there.
And, be like that. Yeah,
get us on the, you know, get us on Instagram or Zoom me.
Where's he going to put his tail? That's disgusting. Sorry, I'm still looking at dogs on the internet. Okay, time for the Twitter vote. Got quite a good response this, boys, this morning. I was quite interested to see. The question was, if there was only one way of watching dedicated and comprehensive rugby league coverage, which is your preference? We gave four options. A, Sky. B, the BBC. C, BT Sport. I couldn't come up with a third, so I went for BT Sport. And the fourth one, stream directly from your club. Well, the winner was, with 36%, the BBC. They just edged out Sky on 32%. BT Sport only got 5%. But surprisingly, coming up the rear was streamed directly from the club with 27%. It's coming, isn't it? It's getting closer and closer to that point where we just choose where we watch our sport through our own clubs, possibly. Are you a more of a BBC boy, Sam, or more of a Sky chap?
Here we go. South of the river.
No, actually, I think there's two distinct issues here. Although at times you get a bit fed up with the way Sky present it, broadly, for 20 years or so now, they have presented our sport in a very good light. But we then compare to the BBC,
caveat.
And as we discussed with Dave Woods last week, they have really...
Don't mention his name on this podcast after pinching
Jonathan
Dave.
Well, they've really upped the game in the last few years, but we're missing a trick here. Sky viewing figures on a Friday night are between 100 and 200,000 people. Mm. Because it's still a subscription programme. Whereas the BBC... The test series against New Zealand, when I looked that up, over 5 million people watched that series. We're on the BBC, we're reaching a wider audience. The bigger audience you reach, the more people are going to be interested in the game and not... Because you only go and watch Sky Rugby League is that if you're not a fan, if there's absolutely nothing else on. So you're not reaching a bigger audience.
This is why we should just sack Elston now and then just sort of like, right, I've got 16 million quid now. Let's just cash it all back in and then and renegotiate at this point.
Well, I appreciate football has a huge audience compared to rugby league, but they've got the best of both worlds. They've got match of the day showing it nationwide, or you go to Sky and BT Sport for your subscription service. And somehow we need to get rugby league regular on a national broadcaster, whether it be BBC, One, Two, or Channel 4 or ITV.
So in that sort of agreement, that sort of contract you're looking for, Sam, isn't the room also to say, if this game is not being shown live on the BBC or whether it's Sky, then the second option is that the clubs are then allowed to stream their games. It's 2020, yes. For crying out loud.
No, I agree with that. And fewer people are going to away matches. So perhaps the first thing you'll see is clubs offering a subscription. If we're away at Hull KR on a Thursday night, Warrington Wolves might put on a subscription, pay-per-view watch there.
Subscription.
But Hull KR won't be keen on stopping their home fans coming to the ground. So how do you, that'll have to be managed somehow.
Well, this pushing the agenda of more teams from outside the country, it's got to go the way of pay-per-view TV, because, like, you know, the average fan's not going to be up in sticks going to the south of France or North America, are they, every week?
No.
And the great thing about streaming is, of course, and pay-per-view is, you just need to get yourself a VPN and watch it for free.
Yeah.
you can watch all the NRL. You can watch every game there streamed direct to you, to mobile, can't you?
Yeah, how's our TV station doing anyway after our first broadcast?
Well, there are a few little technical difficulties there. We may have alienated a few people in regards to our broadcast, but no one in particular. But we're working on that. We're ready to bounce back once the virus disappears. Right. So we'll be fine. I think one thing about Sky, though, is possibly there's one too many commentators. So I put in a call to Sky at the start of the season, and this was their reaction.
Joining me on the phone now is Sky Sports Rugby League presenter Brian Carney. Brian, thanks for joining us here on the podcast. Before we speak about Sky Sports and the commentators over there, first and foremost, have you listened to the podcast with Sam, Dennis and myself?
I'll go on record as saying I haven't come across a more skillful bunch of people.
Oh, thank you very much, Brian. That's really kind of you to say. I thought possibly, you know, in this day and age, not everyone, it's the easiest thing to find and to download and to listen to. What would Brian Bevan say?
People follow it relatively easily, but it's very entertaining.
Oh, that's good to hear. Of course, we have our own statistician on the podcast, and that's Sam Sankey. Is analytics the way he goes about dissecting the game? Have you ever known anyone that would come close to the way that Sam can sort of look at the game?
The obvious comparison would be with Alec Ferguson.
Oh, yeah, of course. We also have Dennis Waywell on the show. He does Dennis's tackle bags each week. What are your thoughts on Dennis?
He's had some tough times.
Absolutely, but hopefully we'll get his medication right this year and he'll be okay. Moving on to Sky and the commentary team, there's been a lot of knocking about there's perhaps one too many presenters now on Sky. Your thoughts on that, Brian?
Nobody wants to see cynicism in the game.
No, absolutely not, Brian. But I think also there's a bit of biasness there in the commentary with Phil Clark and John Wells. Your thoughts on that? I mean, it must be difficult for them at times.
Well, that's absolutely right. And you're asking somebody to think right on the spot.
Well, talking of thinking right on the spot, thanks, Brian. I now have Phil Clark on the line. Phil, your thoughts on the team there at Sky? What do you make of you all working there together?
We're about bringing together the best brains in British sport.
Wow, you're really talking yourself up there, Phil. Of course, we have our own guy over here at What Would Brian Bevan Say, who offers something not too dissimilar. We believe he's the best. What are your thoughts on Sam Sankey and what he provides within his statistics here at What Would Brian Bevan
Say? He's a world authority on statistical performance analysis.
Yes, we couldn't agree more with you, Phil. He really does add to the show. Of course, we also have our own psychic, and that is Madam Boyd, who on more than one occasion has come up with a prediction far, far before the Rugby League press have. Do you think she could offer anything more to the sport?
Pitch predictions as well.
I don't know about that. I mean, she does enough predicting the players that are coming to Warrington. But we'll have a word with her and see if she can come up with a few scores as well. So are all the team there at Sky Sports excited about the season ahead?
Who want to come?
Less of that, Phil. Joining me on line four, we have Barry McDermott. Barry, your favourite player at fullback. Who would you go for, first of all?
At fullback, there could only be one, really. Yestin Harris joined Leeds Rhinos as a young player from Warrington.
Absolutely. And Terry O'Connor on line five. Would you agree with Barry?
Chris Rudlinski obviously springs to mind because he's a fabulous player. He's tremendous. He was great at the back.
Oh, Terry, you sound just like Phil Clark. It's all Wigan this, Wigan that, isn't it? For God's sake, just change the record a bit. In fact, I'm coming to think that everyone on Sky Sports once played for Wigan. Join me on line eight. We have Kevin Brown. Kevin, start of a new season, new club. Come on then, press the tape. How's this one going to go?
Yeah, hopefully if we, I can stay injury free and, you know, keep my form up and, you know, I'm not too worried about scoring tries if I'm setting them up, to be honest, and the team's going well, then I'm happy.
Oh, thanks, Kevin. Let's be joined by the referee now that we're here on Sky every week, and that's Stuart Cummings on line 10. Stuart, what do you offer to the sport? What do you actually do?
If I want to check a decision, I can just straight away click onto the live or the clip I've just saved and review it instantly on the footage there, just to check.
On line 10, let's go down the pub and see if we can get hold of Eddie Hemmings. I mean, at least he used to speak a bit of truth now and again.
Quite a dry event, which is quite strange for Bill and I, but no, fantastic. I mean, look at this, and look at all the branding we've got around the Men United arms. Brilliant, well done, well done. A fantastic effort.
Oh, yeah, I think the locals are a bit. They've got me on speaker. Lads, hello, Eddie, Bill. Can I have a quick word with you, please?
Well, it's been an honour to do it, and the thing that staggered me...
Oh, give up. Line 12. Let's get hold of Steve-O. Steve-O, what do you make of it all now at Sky Sports and the Rugby League?
Why they keep their head in the sands is unbelievable.
Oh, you can say that again, Steve-O. Look, I'm going to ask you one last time. Is there too many of you at Sky now? Do you think you talk over yourselves? Do you think we could just cut it back to two and go back to some kind of formality with a decent commentator and a decent analysis and nothing else?
Yes.
No, no, just one of you, please. One of you speak, please. No, oh. Jesus.
Which is quite strange.
I'm hanging up.
Right, you can all wake up again now. We're back. We're back. One too many commentators, Sam. Wouldn't you like to go back to just two? The simplicity of having a good caller, a good commentary team of someone calling the game and someone with insight, someone intelligent sitting next to them who just comes out with what's going on in those bits in between the ball not being in play.
Yeah, I think I would actually. But also there's what, is it seven or eight of them there? And they show two games a week, usually. You could have three of them on one game, three of them on the other, or four of them on one game, four of them on the other, instead of trying to have them all on at the same time. Then you've got a bit of variation in what you're listening to as well.
I'd like to see maybe an ex-player from each club, and then they almost start arguing about, you know, some of the decisions. And,
rather
and
than
the
half the commentary team all being from Wigan.
Yes, yeah. And you know, and if there was you know, some physicalities to get out of the way, they could maybe film that afterwards.
Guess so.
Remain indoors. Remain indoors.
You are now listening to the Rugby League Emergency Broadcast System.
Welcome back to the Warrington Wolves Isolation News, reporting every week on what the players of the Warrington Wolves have been getting up to. Our supercomputer, Lottie, will analyse the web and social media activities each week and randomly select a player and isolation activity for the podcast to analyse. So, without further ado, Lottie, let's plot those dots from those wire clots. And the results are in. It's Luther Burrell and his fine physique.
Dennis, Luther Burrell, that's who Lottie's picked. What have we got for us?
Well, I haven't got anything there. But other than
well,
the
hang
fact...
on, hang on. Can I just can I just go back to the Sky commentary just for one second? Before the letters come flooding in, I do realise that the plural, the noun bias, the plural isn't biasness, which I may have mentioned in the telephone clip. All right, carry on.
Luther Burrell, or Burrell, as we like to call him. The only thing I'd just like to pick up on, and it's nothing really, but he's putting the pictures up. I would almost like to maybe consider him for our new Mr. Muscle. We noticed at the start of the season, Charnley was Mr. Muscle. It's working out. Well, I have to say, look at the physique of that man. Something to behold. So he's obviously working really hard, and I think to myself, he gets quite uptight about you know, putting that picture up. I think he mentioned, but I have to assure
he
you,
says
Luther,
that. He says
yeah,
that.
You don't need to worry about anything there. I mean, I've been working out in this lockdown, and
shows,
I can certainly say,
shows.
Yeah,
a cock on your head's not twice the size it used to be.
No, I'm not quite at that level. My six pack is basically a one pack of muscle, really, around that area.
Now, come on, lads. Let's just take away that sort of issues we have with rugby league. We've all got a feminine side. Who would you turn gay for, Sam? Which rugby league player? Have you got one?
Where's that come from?
Well, looking at Luther Burrell, he must be appealing to both.
Come on, does it do anything for you? Anything for you when you see Luther with his top off? Little
I'm
bit. You
not
can't
interested.
Pick
I'm more interested in the conversation and someone who will have been able to share a nice bottle of wine with.
It's more stimulation. The titillation comes from the brain rather than big muscles. That's interesting.
So really, I'd like to put them all on the Krypton Factor, and I can make my choice over who performs best.
No, fair enough.
It was never like that with Rob. It was basically get as much down as quickly as possible and in and out before they even remember.
Is there going to be some
there'll
be plenty of lawsuits coming out of the
I was there the night that Warrington played Widnes. It was a midweek game, and Sorensen and Boyd had the big fight in front of us. And I think Sorensen got he got his top taken off. And I was a little tingling in between my thighs. There was a little bit of sexual feeling between the two. It could have been the wintergreen, I'm not sure, but anyway.
It couldn't have been as good as it is nowadays, that body, could it?
No, there were two fat bastards going at it, but it was good to watch.
I remember on that one, there was a woman in the crowd with an umbrella and she was trying to hit something.
You leave my mother alone, Sankey, crying out.
Anyway, going back to just the Instagram bit, point out that you get an insight into what players are going to look like when they come back.
How much of a twat they are, is that what you're saying?
Well, there is that element of it as well, but Luther's going to obviously come back looking absolutely like amazing. Mr. Muscle. But what are some of the others getting up to? Are they going to find it hard? I mean, like, when we were looking at Charnley, he was basically in the gym all the time. He hasn't got access to that now. Do you think we're going to see a few people struggling when we get back?
Yeah, no doubt. But they'll all be at the same level, as John Clark clearly pointed out a few weeks ago on the podcast. So it'll be fine. I think with Burrell, though, there's a lot of self-awareness going on, isn't there? He's in front of that mirror. He knows what's going on. Do you know there's only 10 animals in the world that actually have self-awareness? Did you know that? I won't go through them all. A couple of them are elephants have self-awareness. And also bottlenose dolphins have self-awareness. They have a conscience. They know who they are. But the one I think Burrell is clearly lined up for is Europe.
Go into Burrell, I want to know, who's proven this? Where's this come from?
It's 150 animals they've stuck in front of a mirror to see how they react. This is all about
That's it.
Does your dog have a conscience? Does your dog know it's a dog?
I've stood in front of the mirror in the morning. I don't know if I've got a conscience or a conscience.
Well, Burrell, I think, is a European magpie because they have self-awareness and they are attracted to shiny things.
Yeah.
So he could be lifting the trophy at the end of the year. Although, having said that, they're also black and white, so we might bin him off to Widnes when we all realise that he's shit. So we'll wait and see what happens there. Okay, John F. Kennedy once quoted by saying, leadership and learning are indispensable to each other. So based on this quotation, here's Daniel from his grassy knoll taking a coaching pop shot at Steve Price.
At the risk of alienating a large section of the podcast viewership, I am about to reveal that I'm a massive Liverpool supporter. Yes, as well as rugby league, football is my other passion, and I support the Reds and have done for the best part of 15 to 16 years now. So, with that in mind, I thought I'd look at what Steve Price could learn from Liverpool manager Jurgen Klopp, who has turned Liverpool into a team that are currently champions of Europe, champions of the world, and about to be crowned Premier League champions for the first time in their history. The first thing I should mention is that when Klopp arrived at Liverpool, Liverpool were in a similar position to what Wire are now, kind of underachieving, going nowhere near where they should be for a club of their size, stature and expenditure. So what has Klopp done to transform this? Well, there's been some very clever signings and there's been some very clever recruitment. So the first thing that I think Price could learn about is scouting and how to pick a player in the transfer market, because that's certainly been something that has not gone well at Warrington, and whether that's down to Price or Carl Fitzpatrick or other members of the boardroom, we don't really know. But that's certainly something that he could learn from Klopp. Picking a player, surgical transfers. There's no point buying a player just for buying a player's sake. What are they going to bring to the team? And it might not even be something obvious. There's been certain players that Klopp has signed at Liverpool that I thought, why are we signing this guy? He doesn't fit what we do. And then he's turned out to be a really good player. And there's also been a few situations where Klopp has looked like he's been a little bit stubborn in the transfer market by not buying a player. because he's not felt that there was any point in buying someone just for the sake of it, and he's proven right. So that's perhaps something to consider as well. Another thing that I think Price could learn from Klopp or another top football manager like Pep Guardiola or Jose Mourinho is that you cannot possibly win anything by defending your way to a win. A defence is important. You need a good defence in football and in rugby league, but you can't defend your way to a win. And I think this is what Price tries to do. He tries to limit the opposition's scoring power, fine. But as a result of that, Warrington have no idea in attack and are hoping that the opposition don't score. And we've seen this with games like the Castleford game this season, which obviously we won with a drop goal, and the Wakefield game, which we lost. It only takes one or two tries to beat Warrington, basically, and that's a massive, massive problem. Whereas a top football manager like Klopp, Guardiola, Pochettino, Ancelotti, any of these guys, they would be massive on, to win, you've got to score. And that's the most important thing. The best form of defence is attack. You know, Pep Guardiola, who's a Manchester City manager, has managed Barcelona and Bayern Munich. One of his famous quotes is, if we have the ball, the opposition can't score. Dominating possession is massive in football and rugby league. So there's just a couple of things that Steve Price could perhaps learn tactically, technically, and perhaps in the recruitment department from some top football managers.
Well, you'd be happy with that, Sam, wouldn't you? The fact he's a Liverpool fan. Do you think he's right? We can learn from other sports. I mean, he mentions Klopp. He can't get much better than Klopp at the moment and what he's done at Liverpool.
I think he is right that you can learn from other sports. I need to take issue with a couple of things, though. He was talking about making sure you score more than the opposition. But Klopp's first thing was to sign Virgil van Dijk and Alisson to shore up his defence.
Well, from the sound of music.
So, yeah, exactly. So on that basis, you could argue that Price has got the first half of it right. It's whether he can get, when we come back to playing,
get on with it.
Going forward. I'm being put off by all the waving that's going on.
I'm waving because I know fuck all about football. Sound like Dave Woods, don't I? But
I think we've gone past our 7 fox that we're allowed in a podcast episode. I might need to speak to iTunes about it.
I know absolutely jack shit. Is that all right?
That's fine.
About football. But one thing I did pick up on...
He played for Bolton, didn't he, jack shit? Oh, it was Stanley Matthews. Oh, it was Preston. I can't remember.
He came up with gegenpressing.
Yes. Yeah? Yes.
The tactic of gegenpressing.
What?
Or counter-pressing, if you want to know, by closing down the opposition as soon as you lose possession. So I think what we should do is I'll work on it for Tackle Bag next week. I'll come up with our own counter-pressing sort of word for rugby players or Warrington Wolves. I think that'd be Tackle Bag.
In the old days, you just used to say they got in the faces. There you go.
Yeah. Oh, kick him.
Do good coaches have to have been good players? Are we showing a prejudice against intelligence here? Because it seems that in football now, a lot of the good football coaches aren't particularly good at playing football, but it hasn't bled over really that much into rugby league. Although when you look at the coaches that have done the best, they haven't had much of a playing career. You look at Bennett, Tony Smith, is it a case that maybe... Is it a case that maybe we need to start giving IQ tests before?
Have you got a question at the end of this?
No, yes. I know what you're getting at. No, you don't have to have been a good player. You just have to know the game, whichever sport it is. You have to know the tactics, and you have to be able to command respect in those players listening to you. So it doesn't matter whether you've played or not, as long as the people listening to you
respect
you and think that you know what you're talking about.
That's what I need on this podcast, a bit of bloody respect. Mm. Yeah,
but it's one of those situations, isn't it? It's like we've discussed before about players working in, becoming CEOs of, clubs and things and then making the right fucking ash of it. Like,
another one,
Sinfield.
Eight.
Hey?
You swore again.
Hey.
We're going to be taken off Spotify at this, right? Unbelievable.
We're not on Spotify. We're on, oh, I see. We are.
Oh dear.
How's this podcast going? Just as a, you know, as we get towards the end, is there anything we need to cover?
Oh, no, it's great. Right, I'm moving on to lockdown
letters.
The word
shambles. So your word shambles comes to mind.
It's time for a new section to the show. Well, I say new. We've just rebadged it. Yes, wait for it. It's time for... It's coming. Yes, here it is. Lockdown. I said lockdown. Yes, lockdown. Lockdown letters. Emails. Texts. Tweets. Twitches. MySpace. Bebo. Friends reunite. Those wankers that write on walls in toilets. You know the ones. Put little dicks on the walls with a sort of hole that turns out to be a glory hole if you stick your cock through it. Not that I'd know that. Anyway, it's time for lockdown letters.
Okay, we've had a few good ones this week, boys. We'll start with Ernie Shavers. Ernie Shavers has written, he said, I think Rugby League Cookbook is an excellent idea, but forget making it vegan. I've eaten meat every day for the past 50 years. The match wouldn't be the match without a meat pie in my hand. Keep up the good work, Ernie Shavers. Which is nice, isn't
it? Is he sure it's meat?
Well, he's actually, P.S., he said, he'd also like to give a shout out to Dr. Philip Beaconsfield of the Cardiac Specialist Department at the Warrington General Hospital. So I'm not sure what that's to do with. But...
Christ.
Phil Brown, could you relay to Alan Holton? I like his idea of the Cadence commentator app. I think this could be developed into an app similar to Shazam. If a lie detector was worked into the software too, you could point the thing at the TV screen to see which politicians are talking bollocks. I'm an app designer. Can you pass on my details to Alan? So we'll see what we can do there. He didn't mention one of your tackle bags, Dennis's ideas whatsoever. Just want to point that out. So I went back to myself.
I've got 40 of them. So I'm thinking that I was going to say I was scraping the bottle of a barrel, but I have to say I'm going to come back at it next week with something better.
Charlotte Webster, I heard you mention Phil Blake. I once saw him in Mr. Smith's wearing an Hawaiian shirt and a pair of slacks. He looked like Don Johnson in a Miami Vice from the Crockett and Tubbs fame. I never did hold his Crockett, but a girlfriend of mine did have her Tubbs juggled behind the back of Friars Court by an ex-Wire player. Hashtag simpler times. That's nice, isn't it? So, there we go.
Yeah. It's funny that, isn't it? How you know all these places in Warrington.
I used to fancy that girl in Friars Court. I used to lean over the bar. Remember that old bloke at the end of the counter? He was in there every week, didn't he? He was about 30 years older than anyone else. Just happy days. Okay, Barry Placemat. It looks like we will lose in the region of 30 to 40% of the season if we come back soon. Mm-hmm. Rather than condensing the backlog of fixtures into a ridiculous period of time, why not award 35% more for a try and a conversion? You could also make 2 points for a win, 2.7 points. This way, there'd be absolutely no need to catch up in any games. The simple multiplication of numbers would mean the season would be completed perfectly in line with the way it would have been. Plus, we get an additional 3 minutes and 30 seconds out of Sitiliti-Akawala. The gorgeous big man would have to go nowhere near the gym. What do you think, boys? That's not a bad idea, is it?
I lost it on the percentages bit.
Sam, you happy with that one? Bit of calculations. Well, it works.
Yeah, or we could just, any team we've not played so far, we could just play one match and say we'll play this for 4 points instead of two.
Okay, blame enough. And then the last one. Oh, this, do you know, I like this one. I actually like this one. Zoe Mount. Following on from Dave Birch making models of commentators and painting their genitalia with Airfix paint, I'm considering painting the Halliwell Jones match day experience. Most paintings I've seen of rugby matches are conservative watercolour with no imagination or depth. Is there no room for a new paint medium or a passion of abstract in the world of rugby league? I paint in numerous different mediums from vinyl, ink, chalk, stencil and latex, but I also specialise in unusual materials like soy sauce, mud and excrement, etc. May I suggest that I could paint the famous Warrington Derby with Wigan in the players' bodily fluids and their blood. Hey?
Christ almighty.
Oh dear.
Oh Jesus Christ.
I don't know where these letters come from sometimes, but there we go. Happy days. Well, what's your medium of paint, Dennis? What do you like to paint? And you're more of a sort of an ink man, aren't you? Well, I've seen you do things.
Yeah, I am, really.
You've gone a bit iPad these days, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean, it's the new modern artistic medium, if you like, of using satirical pictures to describe some situations. Right, Sam's gone as soon as you get onto the arty bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't like that.
But yeah, I think that's all right. Although I did have a vision when you were reading that out of doing a Goldfinger body art thing, you know, making somebody using turmeric.
Oh. If you were going to use a player's excrement, would you rather go for one of the vegan players or one of the sort of meat and veg lads?
Oh, well, this is the thing. I think if it was a meat and veg, you'd get a bit more viscosity in terms of how to, you know, spreading it. But vegan, it could be a bit of a shit splash, couldn't it?
Oh, you've got some pens there, Sam. What have you got for us?
I just use a load of different coloured pens.
Oh, they're your colour pens that you draw with. Oh, right.
Yeah.
It accounts with.
Then I don't mix up every sheet.
Is that it? Was that you just left to go and get some coloured pens?
Yeah.
That's as
there
much.
You go. I've got a nice green, a red one, a pink one, a brown one. That sort of goes with what you're talking about.
Stop talking now. Rob's rubbing his head. That's a sign that he's got an editing crisis.
I'm worried about Zoom. We're going to run out of time. Okay, that's it, folks. Send your lockdown letters to whatbevan@gmail.com. or tweet to @WhatBevan. There's always Facebook for you lowbrow inbreds. So from a man who was born the year the Beatles disbanded, it's an octopus's garden goodbye. Until next time, from Sam.
All the best.
And from a chap that was born the year a pint cost just 20 pence, you could buy a Mini Cooper brand new for 600 quid, and you could slap that young girl from accounts on the arse and get away with it. It's a PC. Be seeing you soon from political correctness gone mad, Dennis.
Ooh, yes. Be seeing you.
I'm Rob London. I'm off to celebrate a share of birthday with Morrissey, George Best, and the wonderful Donna Stowe. Or to slightly paraphrase Donna Stowe, cast member Windsor Davis in Ain't Half Hot One, never before have I heard a podcast of such blatant poofery. You've been listening to What Would Brian Bevan Say?
I think we better get a guest on next week. Got Ralph Rimmer's number.
Let's give it a go.
This is Ground Control to me. You've really made the grade, and the papers want to know whose shirt you wear. Now it's time to leave the capsule if you dare. This is Major Tom to Ground Control.